And away we go. Hour number three unfolding at the Holy Grail Banks. It is Bengals Line. Lance McAllister, Dave Lapham, thanks for hanging out with us tonight. Gary Jeff Walker out tonight. Mike Allen in. He'll take you 9 to midnight here on News Radio 700 WLW. Thanks to A.J. Green. Thanks to Jordan Willis. I find myself saying this every year when A.J. joins us for an hour. I'm not sure I've met a more humble and down-to-earth superstar and appreciative of what he has more so than A.J. Green. The guy just, he gets it in every facet.
He is a he's a credit to his parents and his family for sure. I mean, they raised him right. And you know, we didn't talk about it tonight, but he's talked about it before. He had a brother that passed away in an auto accident, and A.J. survived. And so, you know, he felt at that point in time the Lord had a plan for him. And he's trying to live his life as well as he possibly can, as successful as he possibly can, and make it as big an impression, an imprint as he possibly can. And he is succeeding, not only as a football player, but as a human being. I mean, A.J. Green is as good as it gets, top shelf.
The when A.J. starts talking about being a dad, and his line early on in the hour tonight was, after a loss, when he goes home to his wife and kid, they don't judge, I'm just dad. And talking about his son taking a bath and opening up the gate, and his son runs up and jumps in the tub with his clothes on before the water's in. I mean, that's the beauty. I love having an hour with a player because we say this every week, you can learn so much about the player beyond just the player, but you see AJ's face light up talking about his son.
That's what I was going to say. The radio listener doesn't have the advantage of seeing the expression on his face. But, you know, everybody that's a dad, if you saw AJ's face, was the definition of fatherhood, you know?
Yeah.
And, he's a unique individual because everywhere he goes, he reflects very, very positive on, you know, himself, his family, the city of Cincinnati, the Bengals organization. He's a tremendous ambassador. And I don't even think he thinks about that kind of stuff. To him, it's just, I'm just living my life, you know. I'm just gonna do what I need to do. And when you have a guy like AJ, we've talked about it before, it raises the whole boat. You know, when he's being himself, it's such a high level of character and, you know, competitive spirit and everything that goes along with it. Guys, all the other guys say, "Am I doing enough? Man, AJ, he's made the Pro Bowl every year he's been in the league. Does he need to do all that?" Well, I guess if he's doing all that, that's why maybe I'm not doing enough. You know, I think I need to do more. And that's where he, you know, has that ripple effect. You know, it just trickles down and kind of absorbs his whole football team.
And Jordan Willis, I don't know how he lasted to the third round, but that's a talented guy, and it's a guy who also gets it, very well spoken. I remember talking with people around K-State back at the time they drafted him. They said, "You won't believe it. He would spend 3, 4, 5 hours in a day watching film of NFL defensive ends to study their moves." And it's one of those surprising things when you hear him say he was shocked the Bengals drafted him because they'd had no contact, but clearly they had seen enough and knew enough about Jordan Willis that when he was there in the third round, they said, "We'll take you very gladly."
No question. And, you know, I talked to Bill Snyder after the Bengals drafted him, and I said, "You know, Coach, tell me, you know, in a nutshell, as only you can, your impression of Jordan Willis." He goes, "I'll tell you two things. He's a self-made guy." I'm like, "Oh, come on now, Coach. You know, I know you're humble. You know, you and your coaching staff developed this kid." He goes, "Believe me, he's a self-made guy. I mean, he did, you know, 95% of the work on his own." And he said, "And he's the best grinder I've ever seen." I said, "Wait a minute, Coach. Coming from you, the ultimate grinder, I mean, when we would go out there, he'd ask me to come meet him in his office. He's on his treadmill watching video, taking notes while he's getting his exercise in. I mean, he's always multitasking. He wastes no time, and he burns hours up." And I think he's a little bit better about it now, but I remember the Stoops brothers, Bob and Mike Stoops, they were on his staff at Kansas State, and he would say to his staff on Thanksgiving Day, "All right, you guys can go home, you know, it's 11:30, be back here by 1. And they're like, "Coach, that's not even time to carve the turkey. You know, we live a half an hour away." He goes, "That's the way it is, you know, be back here at 1. He just, so, I mean, the ultimate grinder, for him to call Jordan Willis the best grinder he's ever been around, tells you something about that kid's work ethic.
All right, before we go any further, I want to ask you to address what seems to have caught everybody's attention over the last 12 hours or so. You'll be the fifth person I've asked. The first four kind of shook their head and say, I have no idea where that came from. I did not witness it yesterday. You were in the Bengals locker room today. There's a column in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette today by Paul Zeiss, who, paraphrasing here, lays out a scene in the Bengals locker room that he allegedly saw or was told about of laughter and hijinks and joke-telling after the Bengals loss in the locker room. You were in the locker room. Speak to that, please.
I didn't really see it, honestly. I mean, it was no different to me. Guys I talked to after the game were despondent about losing the football game. And obviously Coach Lewis was, but I don't think he was talking about the coaching staff. I think that, in my opinion, he went in there with an agenda. You know, that's what he wanted to see. And, you know, when you go in there in that kind of situation, and you know, you're going to find what you want to find. And if, say, he did find a guy or a couple of guys that might have been smiling about something or whatever, that's judging with a big paint stroke. Everybody in the locker room, you know, joking around and kidding around after the game. I didn't see that. I went down in the field to do some things with Channel 12, so I was, after I did my radio responsibilities, I went down there. So I wasn't down in there the whole time, but I was in there a good chunk of it, and I didn't see it. And my reaction to all of it is, people handle things differently. You know, if we all handled things the same way, it would be a boring world. That's what makes the world go around, is people see things differently, handle things differently. People handle death differently. People handle failure differently. People handle success differently. Some guys are sarcastic about some things. You know, maybe a flippant answer because that's the way they handle disappointment. I mean, everybody is different in the way they handle all that stuff. So, you know, he may have had a flippant answer to one of his questions from, I'll pick a guy, Carlos Dunlap or whatever. It's like, oh, you know, I'm going here with that. All I can say is, I remember Antonio Brown catching all kinds of heat from Tomlin after their playoff loss with his cell phone, taking video of all his teammates to boost his viewership on, you know, whichever social media forum he was on to try to get more sponsorship, and Tomlin went nuts on him because, you know, he's going in the sacred locker room trying to personally gain from it. Why don't you write about that? I mean, you know, I mean, you can find anything you want if you have the agenda to do so. So I don't know. I think he was trying to find something, and his target was probably Vontaze Burfict, because the most hated man in Pittsburgh. And if he saw Vontaze Burfict have anything but, you know, a solemn, stern look on his face the entire time, he was going to write about it. So I'm just picking a guy, you know, because of how Pittsburgh feels about Vontaze Burfict. But this guy, to me, was creating things. And to say the locker room instead of, you know, identify who and what they were doing and all that, I mean, I haven't seen his article. I don't know. Maybe he did. But even if that's the case, isolated pockets of guys does not condemn an entire locker room for not caring whatsoever about the outcome of the football game. And I will say, I remember vividly my rookie year, lost the first professional football game in the regular season that I experienced, and I thought my life was going to end, never mind the season. I'm like, I'm cut. Because I remember, you know, at Syracuse, we lost to Penn State. Oh, everything, my life's done, you know. I mean, like, what? What's with you guys? You know, I won't be able to sleep tonight. Easy, big boy. You know, you got a lot of these. You won't be sleeping much in your professional career. You got to chill out here. It's only one game. We got a bunch of them. But I was like, I can't believe these guys are so cavalier about losing this football game. But you're grown men, and it's your job. You know, it's like if you're a salesman and you go 5 weeks without making a sale, you got to go make a sale the sixth week. You don't commit Harry Carey after 5 weeks. You know, I mean, you got to go, all right, figure out why I didn't get a sale done, change it, and go get a couple sales in week six. Same thing in football. I mean, you can't just say, oh, it's over, I'm done. You learn from it, like Marvin said, learn from it, and then compartmentalize it and move on. So, I don't know. I think this guy was looking for something, and he was going to find it no matter what.
Well said. It is 8:16. We'll take a timeout, get into yesterday's game, look ahead of the Colts. Dave Lapham, Lance McAllister, Bengals Line, presented by Bud Light from the Holy Grail Banks on News Radio 700 WLW. 8:20 on News Radio 700 WLW, Bengals Line from the Holy Grail Banks. Dave Lapham, Lance McAllister. Thanks again to A.J. Green and Jordan Willis for checking in tonight. Want to take care of a card, Dave?
Yeah, let's blow one up here. Lance, Procter & Gamble Community Champion, always a good one. Are you or someone you know active in the community? like our good friend Lance McAllister. Kroger and P&G are teaming up to bring a community champion to each Bengals home game. We want to hear your story. To send in a story, email communitychampion@bengals.nfl.net. And Lance, Bengals Kids Club, Cincinnati Children's Bengals Kids Club, presented by IHOP and College Advantage, is back for another season. Make sure your young Bengals fan is part of the club by visiting bengals.com/kidsclub.
Dave, there are so many things from yesterday. I don't know where to begin, but I want to jump ahead first to the sequence at the end of that first half into the start of the second half. And,
yep.
And it was one of those moments where I circled it on my notepad. I said, that three and out, I think they took 15 seconds off the clock, gave yep. it back to Pittsburgh. And then on the Pittsburgh drive, the Bengals miss a tackle, then miss another tackle, then the Dre pass interference, and just that moment in the game, that was just a killer.
It was. You know, you look at that three and out, that began a sequence that was difficult, to say the least. You go three and out on the last series of the first half. You go three and out in the first series of the second half. Two and out with an interception, five plays and out. You get the only first down from that 14-14 tie to the conclusion of the game. 19 yards offense and one first down. That was a five-play drive that netted 19 yards and ended in interception. Back-to-back drives with interceptions. That's the point in time where I might say, because before the first interception, Giovanni Bernard ran the ball on first down for 8 yards. So on second and two, the interception. Then you have the interception on the second series. I might say at that point, get a guy wearing 28 that had 7 carries for 48 yards, 6.9 yards a carry. Oh, we're throwing interceptions. Maybe I should stick it in his belly a few times. And didn't. But in defense, after both of those, the 6-point lead swelled to 12. Now you're down 2 scores on the road. So now it's like, do I hand it off, or do I have to play catch-up? And the whole game, like I said in the first hour, Pittsburgh was by 12 points. I think at that point in time was like, man, I'm going to have to start to try to throw it. And then coffin nails, you're done. Because at that stage of it, Pittsburgh's saying, they're down 12 points. They're throwing cover two. We don't need that, you know, extra guy in the box. No, we're not going to play cover three with 3 guys in the umbrella. We're going to bring another safety out of there. We're not worried about the run. Play cover two, double AJ, have more people back in coverage. And now you're in trouble, because the cover two of the Pittsburgh Steelers, a horse of a different color than the cover two of the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns gave you all kinds of cavities. Pittsburgh Steelers have those cavities filled. I mean, they went to the dentist. They got every cavity filled.
The Joe Mixon angle, clearly in listening to Marvin today, and I get everybody's frustrated, and including Joe Mixon, yet I think you subscribe to the theory rookies should be seen and not heard.
Right.
Get being a little bit miffed that a rookie shouldn't be opening his mouth. As much as I appreciate what Joe did yesterday in his 7 carries, a rookie shouldn't be opening his mouth saying, I could have done more given more opportunities. At the same time, it was clear in listening to Marvin today, there's other things, whether it's ball security or blitz pickup or just knowing your role, I guess, and shutting your mouth, Marvin isn't completely, I don't know how to describe it, isn't completely convinced or trusting of Joe Mixon?
I think that's a process, and I think his word today was you have to be more mature.
Maturity.
The maturity factor. And, you know, hopefully lesson learned by Joe. I'm sure Marvin talked to Joe. I'm sure Bill Lazor talked to Joe. I'm sure Kyle Kasky talked to Joe. I'm sure Joe got called out by everybody on the coaching staff, you know, to the carpet. And, you know, but with a young talented player, in his head, it's like, but it's the truth. Well, you know, sometimes some people can't handle the truth. It's like, you know, it might be that, you know, I'm not saying you're not telling the truth, speaking the truth, but don't make it public. Come and express your feelings to me, to your coordinator, to your position coach, to your teammates, but not to the media. And, you know, lesson learned there. So I do think, though, that Joe Mixon has great talent, no question about it. You know, he showed it on that 28-yard run. He showed it on the 17-yard run. I mean, he looked Le'Veon Bellish. There's no question about it. The kid, I mean, you heard AJ. He's special.
Yep.
The guy has special physical attributes, and there's no question about it. Now, you know, he's picking up, trying to pick up Bud Dupree, and he mentioned that there was an assignment error, the line slid the wrong way, and you have to tend to agree with him because for a running back to be picking up a defensive end one-on-one is not a matchup you try to create. It's something that you want to avoid if the defense is trying to create it. So it stands to reason there may have been a protection call that was missed or called incorrectly, and he, because at the he adjusted late. He looked like he was a little surprised. It may have been because, you know, Bud Dupree was bigger and stronger and faster than he thought, or it may have been that I'm not really supposed to be blocking this guy, and only they know for sure.
Here's a stat that drives me crazy, Dave. A.J. Green and Joe Mixon touch at 16 of 51 snaps. It's 31%. Mm-hmm. Brown and Bell touch at 48 of 68 snaps, 70.5% of the touches, including the first 10 plays of the second half for the Steelers went to Brown or Bell when the first play of the Bengals' second half went to Jeremy Hill.
Here's the third quarter for Le'Veon Bell. The plays, it broke down 18, and this is another stat that was crazy. In the first half, the Bengals were only outpossessed by 2 snaps. In the second half, by 15. The Steelers had the ball 15 more snaps than the Bengals. That's 2 possessions. Normally an NFL drive, touchdown drives, 7 or 8 plays. So that's 2 possessions the Steelers had that the Bengals didn't because of all the 3-and-outs and everything to go along with it. But in the third quarter, 13 runs, 5 passes. And of the 13 runs, Le'Veon Bell had 1 for 15, for 12, for 9, for 8, for 6, for 4. So he had 6 carries out of those 13 rushes for 54 yards in totality, 9 yards a carry. And it wasn't like the longest one was 15. He wasn't going 25, 17. He was, boom, you know, I'm going to hit you for 8. I'm going to hit you for 9. I'm going to hit you for 6. I'm not going to slash your throat and let you bleed out. I'm going to, you know, give you a nice gash and let you bleed out slowly, you know. I mean, that's how they decided to put him in the meat grinder. And that was the third quarter, and that's when they salted the game away.
Yep.
They had the 6-point lead at the half, and at that point Mike Tomlin said to his coordinator, we're running it because we're not going to turn it over. We have a 6-point lead. The clock is our ally. It's their enemy. And we got Le'Veon Bell. We're running it. So in 2 games, he's carried it 67 times in 2 football games. And the Pittsburgh Steelers defense did the same thing to Kansas City in the first half on the road. Kansas City had 1 first down and 9 yards in the first half of that game. But Pittsburgh beat them. And so in the second half of this one, Bengals have 1 first down and 19 yards. So, I mean, in the first half of Kansas City and the second half of Cincinnati,
yep,
they have masterpieces. You take those 2 halves and put them together in back-to-back weeks, my gosh, that's a defense that's playing at an extremely high level.
And Dave, I could understand one or the – I could understand, say, well, the Steelers in the second half took one away. They took A.J. – or they took Mixon away. They loaded up on – the Steelers were effectively able to, in one half, to eliminate Mixon and A.J. Green from the offense, which shouldn't be able to happen. Mixon doesn't have a carry on the ground, and A.J. has 2 targets in the second half. One is intercepted, and one is incomplete.
Yeah.
And that's like a magic trick. You shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, and you can make – you can create all the scenarios you want and make all the excuses you want. It's basically indefensible. It just can't. It shouldn't happen that way. And you can rationalize everything and anything. But in hindsight, you had a hot running back that you know, had busted a couple of carries against the Pittsburgh Steelers for 25 and 17 yards in Pittsburgh. You've got to put the ball on his belly. I mean, you have to continue to let him grow and breathe a little bit. In my mind, all the great offenses that I was part of, there was balance between the run and the pass, and there was balance within the balance. Multiple people contributed to the passing game. Multiple people contributed to the running game. So, and I am a believer that you don't necessarily force it to A.J. Eddie Brown had Tim McGee. You know, Chris Collinsworth had Isaac Curtis, or vice versa. It was like, you know, 1 and 1A. And, you know, and then they had a tight end to boot. You know, Chris and Isaac had Dan Ross. You know, Tim McGee,
yep,
and Eddie Brown had Rodney Holman. I mean, all these guys are Pro Bowl guys. So, you know, there's only one football. But when you're a good offense, you figure out ways to get everybody involved and keep them all happy. You know, Bill was saying today, and there's truth to it, that usually 5 out of the 8 skill people after the game are upset. You know, I wasn't involved. I didn't get the ball.
Right, but and I heard that. But my rebuttal would be, why, other than A.J. Green and O.J. or A.J. Green and Joe Mixon, I don't care if anybody else is mad, because I'm going to say to them, my two best guys are over here. That's why they got the ball, because they're my two best guys.
Well, and you have in Pittsburgh, Martavis Bryant was targeted twice. He wants out. He wants out of Pittsburgh. Martavis Bryant on a team that could go to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And he's saying, I don't care about you guys. It's about me.
And he called in sick today. He went to the doctor and was not at practice.
Yeah, so. He's definitely sick. Go. He's got some issues. But, I mean, you know, he wants out. He wants to go somewhere where he's going to be the number one guy. Careful what you wish for. You may go to Cleveland and not win a game for 2 years.
He's Dave Lapham. I'm Lance McAllister. We are rolling. Bengals Line presented by Bud Light. We're at the Holy Grail Banks on the home of the best Bengals coverage. News Radio 700 WLW. 8:36 on News Radio 700 WLW. We're at the Holy Grail Banks. Lance McAllister, Dave Lapham. Thanks to A.J. Green and Jordan Willis for joining us. We got to hustle because we got the Colts. We got the defense. One quick one on offense, and I don't get this. I don't know if it's brain cramp or what it is, but on 4th and 2, how does Andy Dalton throw the ball 20 yards out of bounds when he could have turned over backwards and snapped it between his legs down the field for all I care? You just can't throw the ball out of bounds down by 14 on 4th down and 2.
Yeah, Bill was asked that, and his answer was he made a reference to a Vince Lombardi coach team that people said, you know, no matter what part of the game they tuned into, they didn't know if they were 0-0 or winning 35-0, they played the same. So I guess, you know, in the first quarter, Andy may have thrown it away on 4th and 2, but at that stage of the game, they're not the same. It's not the same situation. Marvin was asked about it and addressed it, and, you know, his comment was, more guys have to present themselves as an option for Andy. He had no options. So, you know,
yeah, but
if you turn it over, you turn it over.
Right, I'll say it. If he hauls off and throws it as high and far down the field as he can and it lands and bounces out of bounds, no big deal. If it's picked off, if it's picked off, it's a punt and you got it way down the field. I would have shot it out of a cannon. I would have deflated it and thrown it with two hands. I would have done anything except throw the ball 20 yards out of bounds.
Yeah, I mean, I think you take a chance, you know, obviously in that situation, but they're going to defend their quarterback. I mean, they're not going to say, yeah, you know, he made a mistake. That's a bonehead play. It's like throwing an interception. When you throw it out of bounds, you know, my belief has always been if you give the ball up on downs, on 4 downs to the defense, it's like fumbling on 3rd down, 1st down, 2nd down, you're turning the ball over at that spot. If you turn it over with an incompletion, you're giving the ball to the defense at that spot. In my mind, if a possession does not end with a punt, an extra point, or a field goal, if it does not end with a kick, it is a turnover. So that was a turnover. That gives the Bengals 3 turnovers on the day, not just the 2 interceptions.
And I won't ask this of you. I would wonder how everybody else in the locker room takes it when Joe Mixon, who was a good performer, wasn't paid attention to in the second half, and Andy gets defended by the coaching staff for throwing a ball 20 yards out of bounds. I'm not asking you. I'm just saying if I'm everybody else in that locker room, I'm going, huh, quarterback gets defended for that decision, and the running back gets jumped on for simply wanting the ball in the second half when he did well in the first half.
Right, but Andy has
editorial
never,
comment.
But yeah, Andy's never called out coaches,
agreed,
teammates.
Agreed.
That's the thing. I mean, the maturity thing that Marvin's talking about, you know, Andy's earned that right in their mind. He's never thrown them under the bus. They're not going to throw him under the bus. In their mind, Joe Mixon threw them under the bus.
Yep.
That's the plain and simple fact.
Defensively, the tackling was poor, certainly compared to what we'd seen leading up to this yesterday.
Right.
There were moments where I wondered where Geno Atkins was, and even Vontaze Burfict didn't have a big impactful day yesterday.
To me, you know, always have had respect for Mike Munchak. He has a Pro Bowl center in Pouncey and a Pro Bowl guard that's maybe as good a guard as there is in the NFL right now in David DeCastro. The other three guys came in the league as college free agents. Hubbard at right tackle, you know, and left guard, left tackle, come into the league as college free agents. Villanueva was originally with the Bengals as a tight end, as a college free agent, before he went to Pittsburgh. You have 3 college free agents, and you're owning the line of scrimmage.
Cool.
That's because Mike Munchak, it's not who they are, it's what they do. It's how he teaches them. It's how they attack the line of scrimmage. It's how they are physical. It's how they, like we were talking about last Monday, Lance, they fit and run their feet and finish for Le'Veon Bell. And Le'Veon Bell has so much confidence in what they're doing, he'll come to that stop. And as soon as the guy picks a side to defeat the block, he accelerates the opposite way. And that's just having total confidence in the guy in front of you that he's not going to whiff. His guy's not going to blow you up. They attack the line of scrimmage. And you look at the pocket Ben Roethlisberger had. Tackles keep it wide. Guard and center keep it deep. Whew! And the other side of things, poor Andy Dalton, every time Pittsburgh twisted, when the ends loopers came inside, they're given so much ground. Andy Dalton he's in a hole. They're right in his face. He's getting blasted. And I feel bad for Bill in that situation because he's got a bad wheel. How do you get him out of pocket when he can't run? And you're increasing the chances that he might hurt his ankle if he stays in the pocket. If you get him out of pocket, he might hurt his ankle because he can't really run. And you know, now you're asking him to do mechanics where on the run, more torque, you know, on that bad ankle, throwing the football. I mean, it's almost like, wow, you're in a tough spot if your line, you know, is having difficulty. No sacks by either team through three quarters. In the fourth quarter, Pittsburgh gets four. Two on first down, two on third down.
And I'm not, I know I'm called the Andy Dalton apologist, but I think you'll back me up on this. Just the TV version that I saw, his second interception on the, that was the one to Malone, on the release, Hopkins was right into his body and stopped the momentum of the throw. From just the TV version, you saw a much better version, am I right?
Right, and Marvin said it today, and I'm sure Andy would say the same thing if he was sitting right next to us. Shouldn't have thrown it. Tight window, very, very difficult throw. And as you said, it was burdened by, you know, an opportunity to not stride and transfer your weight to make a more accurate throw. I wish Malone, in hindsight, would have fought for it a little bit more. He just jumped and got the hand. Against Pittsburgh, you have to attack the football every time because you got to make sure that they don't get the ball. You know, putting one hand out there is not going to get it done. And AJ's was the same type of interception. He had to dive. I mean, that was not an accurate throw by Andy, and A.J. dove to make, and he got one hand on it. And once you get one hand on it, now it's tipped, and you have to go attack the football, but your instincts are, you know, just go and do what you can. But I thought Malone could have attacked it more, and it's a coaching point. It's a learning deal for Malone. That was the first target he's had in the NFL, and these guys mean business. So if you're not going to be able to get it, make sure when you're airborne, they don't get it. Make sure you fight for it. With that said, should Andy have thrown it? Hell no. But if he does throw it, you got to make sure that he doesn't suffer an interception because then Andy says, wow, you bailed me out, rookie. I'm coming back to you. You bailed my butt out.
Good point. 8:43, more to get to, including the Colts. Dave Lapham, Lance McAllister, Holy Grail Banks, Bengals Line, presented on Bud Light. By Bud Light, News Radio 700, WLW. 8:46, News Radio 700 WLW. We're at the Holy Grail Banks. It's Bengals Line presented by Bud Light. Lance McAllister, Dave Lapham, Mike Allen in tonight, 9 to midnight. He's in for Gary Jeff Walker. The Indianapolis Colts, losers yesterday, 27-0 to Jacksonville. I saw one note and found it hard to believe, but I saw it twice, so I'll take it. The Colts were shut out yesterday for the first time since 1993. That sounds impossible, but that's what it said even in the headline, so I'll take it. You mentioned the 10 sacks. Jacoby Brissett probably woke up rather sore today.
Yes.
T.Y. Hilton, speaking of guys talking, now he's a veteran, but threw the offensive line under the bus in the postgame yesterday and basically said we did our jobs and they didn't do their jobs. And that is a mess in Indianapolis right now.
T.Y. Hilton, Lance, averaging 19 yards a catch. Number one in the NFL from what I saw in averages per catch over a certain number. I mean, you know, you have a single-digit catch, you can have a small sample size and maybe have a higher average, but anybody over 25 catches, he's blowing them away. I mean, A.J.'s averaging well over 15 yards a catch, which is outstanding, 15.6. This guy's 19 yards a catch, 512 yards on only 27 catches. He's tied for 43rd in the league in terms of number of catches, number one in average yards per catch. So, but yeah, that's interesting. Now everybody's starting to point fingers, and that's never a good situation at all.
They lose Malik Hooker. He's out for the year. The Lakota West product, Ryan Kelly, injured his hamstring yesterday, and there's questions about him. We'll see later in the week, but they're dealing with a lot of injuries as well.
Hooker had three interceptions, tied for third in the NFL. He's probably the number one rookie in terms of interceptions, leading the pack there in the National Football League. So, you know, there's probably a competition for Carl Lawson at this point in time might be by the boards, you know, on the back end with all those interceptions. Mm-hmm.
The injury-wise for the Bengals, Kevin Minter, do we know the extent of Minter going forward?
No, I think there may be a dislocation involved there. And when you're talking dislocations, it's just a matter of how much soft tissue damage is there, you know. And until they get swelling down and can look at it and all those sort of things. But to me, it looked like it was a dislocation. And we'll see. We'll find out. You know, you look at Tyler Eifert, it put him out for the year. You look at Sean Williams, it put him out for about 6 weeks. So, you know, it could be anything and everything in between, depending on even if it was a dislocation or not. But dislocation, he could be put on injury.
Always circle back around to Kevin Huber. It's deserving. Two more inside the 20 yesterday. He just keeps getting it done.
He really does. I mean, he's having just a phenomenal year. And when you look at him, his season, he's punted the ball 31 times and has 15 inside the 20, almost 50%. I mean, that's crazy, crazy good. He's got 15 inside the 20 tied for second most in the league. He's one of eight punters that don't have a touchback yet. And that plus 15 puts him at third best in the league. And he's sixth in average, eighth in net. And in both cases would be a personal best for him in his distinguished career. He's a Pro Bowl candidate for sure.
What did you see as the fake punt unfolded? What led to that?
Well, I think they were trying to play like have their cake and eat it too. Try to you know mess with them a little bit, and the blocker on the gunner comes inside to rush off the edge. Darquez Denard's responsibility is to kind of play it halfway and discourage them from throwing the football, but still being in position where he can be involved if they punt the ball. And he just got there too late and then undercut it instead of going over the top. You got to make sure they don't throw it over the top. And he tried to undercut it by going there late, and they threw it over his head for a big play. But on that play, when I saw it unfold, C.J. Uzomah was like in the A-gap, untouched. He thought obviously he was going to go direct snap to the punter. He ran. He didn't even hit the personal protector. He's right there. Right there, the ball should not have even been gone airborne, but he didn't recognize it. He didn't see it, feel what was going on, and didn't make a play on the personal protector. In my eye, he was right there in the A gap between the center and guard on the punt team, and whoosh, right by.
Pro Football Focus had William Jackson rated as the highest Bengal performer yesterday by a wide margin. Is he their best? Is he their best corner right now?
Yeah, I asked Marvin to critique his performance today, and he said, you know, got work to do. I said, do you like what you saw, though? Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, he definitely makes plays. There's no question. I mean, he got his hand on a few balls on Antonio Brown, an outstanding receiver. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got some talent. The Pittsburgh Steelers wanted him. It's no secret. They wanted him, and when the Bengals plucked him right before they selected, they went with Artie Burns. But they coveted William Jackson, big time, and he's a good-sized corner that has great recoverability speed and long arms. He's a good one.
Down the stretch, we'll go put the wraps on it next. Bengals Line presented by Bud Light, Holy Grail Banks, News Radio 700, WLW. Heading down the stretch, final couple minutes, news at 9 o'clock. Mike Allen in for Gary Jeff Walker, 9 to midnight. Dave, I'm reading Jay Morrison on Twitter from the Dayton Daily News. He points out the Bengals are -9 in turnover margin. Yep. Only the Browns are worse at -11. Here's what's staggering. Four takeaways through six games. It's the fewest in Bengals history to have just four turnovers through the first six games of the season. That's amazing.
Still no fumble recoveries. It's up to 17 games. No fumble recoveries. There's some hope. Indianapolis has put it on the ground 15 times.
Oh, geez.
Tied for second most in the NFL. They've only lost three of them, which is amazing. The ball keeps bouncing back to them. But they've laid it on the ground 15 times. You know, the Bengals haven't recovered a fumble. One of their biggest problems, though, Lance, is they're not forcing many. Mm-hmm. They've only forced three fumbles, tied for second fewest. So something's got to give. The Colts have put 15 on the ground. The Bengals have only forced three. One's tied for second most. The other's tied for second, or is got second fewest. The Bengals are one of only three teams in the NFL don't have a fumble recovery, and it's 17 straight games.
That's impossible to comprehend. I mean, even in a league where it seems the trend has been to try to strip more than wrap, you'd think you'd fall into a fumble recovery in 17 games. That seems impossible.
It is. They get 13 giveaways, tied for second most, as you said. Cleveland's the only one with more. They have four takeaways, tied for second fewest in the league, and they're minus nine, tied for second worst. And they have still not won the turnover margin in any game. They're even or minus, have not had a plus game yet in the turnover department. And, you know, bottom line, you go into Pittsburgh and play Pittsburgh, like we said, they win 73% of the time. They're third best in the NFL over a long time frame defending home turf. Number one, New England. Number two, Green Bay. Number three, Pittsburgh. So you know when you go in there, you have to bring your A game.
Yep.
And they brought their C-minus game in terms of coaches, players, everybody. They brought their C-minus game. You're not going to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in Pittsburgh bringing the C-minus game.
Nope. And you mentioned it earlier. I mean, look, I went back and looked, and I just at the start of the season, I did my silly win-loss through the schedule, and I had them 3-3 at this point. And if you just beat Baltimore in the home opener like you should have, they're 3-3 and not 2-4. And there's, I mean, losing, as you say, losing in Pittsburgh, you hate that, but it's Pittsburgh, and they win most of the time. But 3-3 just would feel so a lot different than 2-4 does.
Yeah.
Having lost to the Ravens at home.
And then when you look in the rearview mirror, you know, you had the Green Bay Packers beaten up there in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers. And now both Pittsburgh and Baltimore don't have to worry about that.
Ugh.
And, you know, obviously it's a different animal without Aaron Rodgers at the helm. You know, and should have beaten Houston too. I mean, it was Watson's first start. He didn't know what he didn't know. He's more than proven himself. But against the Bengals, he was a very uncertain quarterback. He beat him with his legs, you know, on that 49-yard touchdown run. But, I mean, the kid's dynamic. There's no doubt about it. But he didn't have any tight ends to throw to. Their line was beaten up. I mean, there were so many teams that were ripe for the taking in the early stages, and the Bengals let them all, you know, slide through their fingers and getting off to the slow start that they did with that 0-3 beginning. And as you say, Lance, honestly, Baltimore's not very good.
Nope.
You go minus five, you should lose by 40, and they lost by 20 because Baltimore's just not very good, and to be shut out at home in your home opener. And when we looked at it, it was like, wow, for the first time they have a home opener.
Yep.
You know, and then we got two in a row at home. How about getting off? And what kind of a start happened?
Yeah.
The worst you can think of, and cost Ken Zampezi his job.
Last question, 15 seconds. Will they take the wraps off? Will they pull the curtain off of John Ross this weekend?
Oh, boy, I'm hopeful. you know, I just don't know, though. I mean, you know, Marvin, he's going to want to see more than one practice of Joe Mixon being involved. I mean, John Ross being involved with the team aspect of practice. And I'm not sure that he'll be involved with all of it because I'm not sure how advanced he is in knowing all of it. But I'm telling you, Lance, when he's physically ready to go, got to get him out there. He's threat extraordinaire.
All right, that'll do it. Thanks for hanging out with us. We will catch you next week.
Yes.
Bengals Line, presented by Bud Light, Holy Grail Banks, and the First Star Logistics Bengals Radio Network and News Radio 700 WLW.